This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
A growing theory in the Nancy Guthrie investigation centers on something called a wrench attack, highly organized crypto extortion schemes that use violent home invasions and kidnappings to target wealthy victims and demand cryptocurrency ransoms. These operations are run by sophisticated networks that stay almost impossible to trace. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, is with us to help explore it. I know I had never heard the term wrench attack until I saw you were posting about it this week. Explain to me more about what a wrench attack is and how this might fit the profile of what's going on here.
Well, there's different versions of wrench attacks. So initially, and the whole premise is when you have cryptocurrency, there is no way to get to it except for by having the passkey. Mm-hmm. And so the premise is, listen, we can't get their crypto. The only way to get their crypto is to beat it out of them with a wrench. The wrench comes in because literally a cartoon about this, attacking somebody with a wrench, and it kind of stuck. So just so you know the...
Yeah, you know, the genesis of it, yeah.
Is that some highfalutin thing? Is just, no, it's a cartoon of a beat, like, some with a wrench.
Tasmanian devil attack is the next one. You're like,
Wile E. Coyote. Yeah. Super genius.
TNT attack, yeah.
It's like a TNT attack. So the whole idea is that nobody is going to protect their crypto passkey when they're getting the hell beat out of them with a wrench or other objects. So that's where it comes from. And so, by the way, and check these stats, but in 2024, there was $813 million paid in cryptocurrency for ransoms. And 2023, $1 billion, over $1 billion paid. So while we don't hear about it a lot, I don't normally see this out there. We don't talk about a lot of kidnappings for some reason, I think because they always resolve quicker. Right. Mm-hmm. The person is dead. They get the people. They don't get the people, but you never hear about it. And so, but this is what kidnappers want, because you can't trace it very easily at all. It's very difficult. And the money is instantaneously in your wallet, and then you can get rid of it instantaneously. So for these reasons, this is what kidnappers use. And there's kidnappings all over the world all the time.
Yeah. I got the numbers.
Oh, good. Did you confirm what I said? I'm going by my memory.
Yeah, 2023, $1.25 billion. 2024, $813, $892 million. 2025, $820 million.
Already.
In so, cryptocurrency, ransoms.
People, it's an industry.
Industry, people.
Lori DeBalvallo did the wrong thing with this whole, you know, life insurance shit, huh? Sorry.
Kind of the wrong business, Lori.
Yeah, it's the future. It really is the future. The
future of ransoming.
The future of kidnapping. We should do it like a corporate video. The future of kidnapping is here. Introducing wrench attacks. We could get some interesting spokespeople for it, you know? It'd be exciting. Yeah. A little B-roll in there.
Those are big numbers.
So wrench attack. I get the concept. You're getting beaten with a wrench and they want your password. I'm guessing Nancy Guthrie doesn't have a crypto wallet and a password. So walk me through how it connects into here.
Okay, so how it connects into here, and I actually found another case that so far I've deep dived. I'm sure there's many more out there, and there's many more cases that we don't even know about, right? Because they resolve with payment and so forth. But nevertheless, the one I looked at was actually somebody who did have cryptocurrency, and they kidnapped the father.
Okay.
They kidnapped him, they took him, and they actually kept him in an Airbnb. And I am telling you, it would not surprise me at all if Porch Guy got an Airbnb.
Got it where?
An Airbnb. He had to have some place to take her.
Right.
And so in this other case I was looking at, they got an Airbnb and they tortured this poor man. They actually cut off his finger before he ended up being rescued, and he survived. And but it was the son that had the money.
Yeah.
Much like in this case. So I saw this parallel. It's not that they just go in and beat the person with the crypto. They beat the relatives of people with the crypto. Now, do we know that Savannah Guthrie and her husband, who jointly they're worth about $45.6 million.
Uh-huh.
You know, when you are a high wealth individual, you are going to have your assets handled by other people.
You're not going to have your password, like your crypto, like it's handled by an investment company, you know?
Right. Yeah. But I'm just saying, I think it's highly possible that their investors had invested in crypto.
Okay.
It's been denied and it hasn't been supported. We don't know. But I could definitely see that that could be probable, particularly because crypto has been exploding. It's on the down right now a little bit. But do you see where I'm going with this?
But they never exercised that lever, though. They never went to them with anything of like, here's Nancy and here's a wrench and it's coming towards her head unless we get your crypto password or anything of that sort. That's where it kind of like, doesn't that where it falls apart or am I missing something here?
I think you're missing something because Porch Guy is a mope and Porch Guy screwed this whole thing up. I think she was unconscious when she left out of there. I think she was alive because we see the aspirated blood. I found this great picture that's away from the picture people are trying to focus on, the one where there's a lot of drops, which never convinced me. But when you look further away, you can see, did I say aspirated? I meant expirated. Everybody else keeps saying aspirated. I'm like, it's expirated blood.
Expirated
blood on that porch. So we know she was alive, but was she conscious? What went on in there from 212 to 228? And I think there was a physical assault of some nature. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about beating her to death. I'm talking about a few blows. She had to have been bleeding internally for her to expirate blood. So for these reasons, I think Porch Guy either A, overdid it, or B, just got too rough with her. And I think she passed. And it's terrible. So now their whole scheme is blown.
It's also interesting. Good, interesting idea on the Airbnbs. I looked this up. Holy cow. There's about 3,000 to 5,000 active Airbnbs within 100-mile radius of Nancy's house.
I wonder how many Airbnbs are used for crimes. Let's look at that stat. Okay, so essentially the thought process goes, Porch Guy is the mope. He's a low-level player in this to just go get her, really doesn't have a dog in the fight other than he's getting a paycheck for doing this job. Overdoes it, kills her, so they never are able to exercise their demand for the money because she's dead, and it totally screws the whole thing up, and they don't want to get caught or have somebody turn on them and go, no, I'm a low-level mope, it's these fuckers over here who are doing this and I was working for. So they kill mope, Nancy's dead, and whoever's doing this is in a different country, so there's not a lot of things to trace. Is that kind of the direction?
That's the overall premise. And I put out there several weeks ago about that maybe Porch Guy is dead, and then now it's kind of catching on. But I don't necessarily think that they would even need to kill Porch Guy. But I wonder if they paid Porch Guy. And I got to tell you this too, I'm more convinced than ever that maybe only Porch Guy was there that day. There could have been somebody in the car, but I mean, in and around that house, I really believe when you look at the data, right? We can't be influenced by anything else but the data. No one else is seen on any of the video or camera footage.
I think it's just him.
I do too. Yeah. You do? Yeah, I do. And that two-way race.
Because he didn't react. I mean, none of his reactions were when he was startled by anything. First of all, he wasn't much startled. And when things gave him pause or anything, I mean, he was not looking around for affirmation or confirmation from anyone else in any of those things. That indicates to me there was no one around to have that with. I'm with you on that. I think he was solo. Not maybe solo acting, but solo there.
Yeah.
How does
torn a little bit just because both two doors were open. And so I keep wondering, was there a person dressed like him? Were there two actors dressed similarly? I have not. I have not given up on that, or not given up. I have not released that as a possibility for sure.
Yep. So you got a mope that in a scenario like this, are these people in a wrench attack where it's the mope that's going in and doing this? How tied into the handler are they? Is this just kind of like a side hustle in the criminal world where it's like, hey, so and so over here has a job, you know, you want to do it? Or are these trusted lieutenants of the higher the one that's pulling the cords or what? Because my question would be, where do you find mopes? And look into that community and go, you know, that's kind of where I'm at.
They're not tied in at all, Tony. Take the case that happened the day before Nancy was abducted. Two kids, 17, I believe, and 18 from California. They drove over 600 miles. They drove only an hour or so north of Nancy Guthrie. And they went into a house of individuals that they believed had cryptocurrency, dressed alike in FedEx outfits. They were given 1,000 seed money from 8 and Red, who they were communicating with in over Signal. This is a classic, classic wrench attack. These two kids are, you know, sadistic. They tie the people up and start beating the hell out of them. But because they're unsophisticated idiots, by the way, who never even knew one another, they left. There was a child of theirs that was upstairs, and I don't know how young, but there was a minor upstairs, and he calls the police in hiding, and the police come and break it up before, you know, they A, crypto key, and B, or B, kill these two. That is a classic wrench. You know, look at that statistically. And I know we talked about this a little bit earlier. This happened an hour and a half, maybe, away from her house the day before. I mean, to think that these attacks don't happen is just people. That's a wackadoodle thought. They happen. Yeah. And it's tracked. Where do they find them, Tony? They find them on the dark web. If you've ever been on the dark web or had a case involving the dark web, you can hire murderers, you can hire kidnappers, you can get a hold of about anything. And the Bureau is heavily and always has been deeply embedded in the dark web in a undercover capacities. Yep. And has many cases out of the dark web. And I think that that's where they find these people. They're willing, they raise their hand. They want to be Batman and Robin for a day, if you want to call it. Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, they want to be, what are the other two? The Green Goblin and the Joker for a day and get a big payout because they're sadistic idiots.
Yep.
Have they ever, I mean, what about using the dark web against the dark web, about recruiting folks within the dark web those will be the folks that have the most knowledge, the most understanding, the most connections within, because they actively work within it. Is there any flipping people in that world?
Oh yeah.
For a case like this?
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's undercovers and people that, you know, within the Bureau that are very good. And again, this is a place, too, of a lot of child exploitation. Yeah. So
I've trained them, you know, so inside the Bureau and other agencies as well. So I do a lot of communication training, a lot of interview and undercover training. So I've done a lot of training, just not in the Bureau, but other federal agencies for people operating on the dark web for just these things, not just these things, but anti-terrorism things. Cause yeah, like Jen was saying, this is where transactions happen within a lot of anonymity. And that's why you find all the child predators online there too, cause they think they can operate with anonymity. Unbeknownst, well, they know it, that the law enforcement is trolling around in there, but there's a lot of nooks and crannies they try hiding in.
How are they? I don't even know how to access. I've heard the dark web forever. I have no idea how to access the dark web or what it looks like. I don't even know what to think of there. But obviously, I know it exists. How do people, why do they use it when they know the FBI is lurking around in there? Is it just they can't help themselves and they're taking their chances? Or are there other places that these folks linger that should be looked at?
Well, first of all, the use on the dark web is millions. I mean, it's not a small place.
Sure.
And it's easy to hide and get away with a lot. And, you know, not all the phishing ends up catching the crook. But there's so many successful cases, Tony.
Yeah.
But that's and I know from somebody like me who is Occam's razor that this sounds very wow, but it's really not.
Yeah.
It's really not. You have sophisticated ring that get mopes and they kidnap and or beat people. And I'll tell you, one of the biggest reasons that I'm talking about it so much as a possibility is because these emails and the Bitcoin, you have the best of the best for 112 days, I think we're on, and they not crack who got into six different times, three different servers in these emails. They can't crack it yet. And by the way, that's another possible in solving this. And then, of course, the Bitcoin. But the FBI does Bitcoin cases all the time.
Yeah.
Nothing here. And you know who's tickling the wire. The bad guys are the ones seemingly tickling the wire. We're not doing it.
So where it sits right now, Jen, where would you, if you're in charge here and you're putting resources on this case, where would you have him look right now?
Oh, I would have them all over, again, these email, the server where that email was sent to these media sources. You have three different sources, which I think is good, where they would have come in through. I would be paying the best of the best outside of the Bureau to get this hammered out and figured out. Whoever invented the system for each of those media companies where you can send a note, I would be working night and day with them to see what they can resolve. Also, I would have the best of the best Bitcoin experts there are out there to figure out this wallet that was opened and where it was opened and how it was opened and who it traces back to. It has to trace back to somebody.
Yeah.
Even if it's way, so I'd be all over that side of it. For this
the
first
question is, the question is, does that just lead back to a scammer, or does it actually lead to the person who did this?
You know? Well, look at how the FBI reacted based on them believing it was related to the abductors. Look at everything they did: 5 different appeals to, and the orchestration, and BAU, and what Savannah Guthrie said herself. I believe those first two notes are real because she knows what's in them. And I believe they're real from everything. When I say real, not real for ransom. Look, they knew they were likely not going to get it. But if you follow these groups, they just keep pounding and pounding and pounding. The other thing is that I find interesting is everybody keeps saying the second 6 notes aren't related. It's so dumb to say that. We don't know. They can't figure out those notes either. So they have a lot in common. They can't find them who wrote them. You asked for Bitcoin as well. And they were equally obscure about the whole thing. And nobody else is doing that. At least notes to these media companies. So my whole thing is, how can you not say that they're all connected?
Yeah.
So Jen, if it's a sophisticated Bitcoin group that has done this before, you know, at the higher level targeting, but you said you don't think, you know, they ruined it because she wasn't able to give sign of life or proof of life. But again, that approach, I'm going to discount the approach being off from typical ransoms, but the Bitcoin is very common from what we're seeing from the numbers. But again, I'm trying to struggle with, so why did they even do it then if there wasn't a hope of it, if the first two were real, if they didn't expect to get the money? But then we'll reverse it. If we think it was targeted for torment against Savannah, why then, except if the guy's dead and he's acting alone, why then aren't we getting more leakage going on right now? So if we have Bitcoin on one, why that methodology if they didn't think they're going to get it? And if it was the other to torment Savannah, why aren't we getting more there? Any ideas?
Okay, so the first half of your question, look at the two kids, right, that we cited that we have a lot more information on, write these two kids, and they're being tried as adults, from what I understand. So they didn't get anything there either, but they're just willing to, these people are horrible. They're like the people that try to get ransom paid in all these missing cases. It just happens with every missing case, right? Mm-hmm. But this is to an all new level. And so hopefully that answers your question. This is just one of the many attacks they have done and going to do. And they know that most of them aren't going to work out. But man, the ones that do end up to be $183 million last year and $1.2 billion in 23, and already up to $100 million in 2025. So, you know, you keep casting the line.
Okay.
And you don't care who's left. And then you hope that if you keep beating them and beating them, that at some point, maybe they'll get desperate. And you'll get something. I'm the one suggesting actually to tickle the wire, but I think it's worth it if this keeps going on unresolved.
Yeah. Lots of thoughts on where this is heading and where it's at. And obviously, we'll keep watching. I saw one of our viewers said you have a crypto expert on Tuesday. Is that right?
I do. I've had him on before. He's amazing. He actually is in the thick of it. He doesn't talk about it. He's not just he's a professional. Every day he works with Bitcoin. He is in charge of all this Bitcoin distribution and all creating. And I mean, it's unbelievable. I did a show with him already, but the problem was it was up here.
Okay.
If you listen to that show, it's like, whoa, what? And I kept trying to decipher it and break it down. But we're doing just a question and answer Tuesday at 10.
Okay.
Viewers. So it's down at our level.
Yeah. Okay, great. Break the case.
Then maybe not mine, because I don't understand any of it.
Yeah,
I wee brain on this.
I know. I feel the same.
I believe in stacks of cash, man. That's my only thing.
Make it rain. So check that out. Break the case. Jennifer Coffendaffer on YouTube, wherever you get podcasts. Press subscribe and check it out so you can learn more. I'm going to watch and listen too, because I need to. It's an area that I could certainly be more knowledgeable on in terms of understanding how it all functions. So go and check that out. Also, Robin's latest book, It's Not All About Me. It's available wherever books are sold. Go and check that out. And your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and give us your 2 cents. We'll continue the conversation there. Until next time, for Jennifer, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
A crypto executive in France was kidnapped from his home along with his wife. The people who took him cut off one of his fingers. They wanted 10 million euros in cryptocurrency. In Arizona, two teenagers from California, 16 and 17 years old, drove over 600 miles to a neighborhood in Scottsdale, put on FedEx uniforms they'd bought off Amazon, knocked on a stranger's front door, and when that door opened, they forced their way inside, beat the homeowner until he had a concussion and a broken rib, duct tape both adults to chairs, and demanded access to $66 million in digital currency. They were carrying a 3D-printed gun. They'd known each other about a month. And when investigators asked them why they did it, they said two people they'd never met. Screen names Red and 8 on an encrypted messaging app told them to. That's what a wrench attack looks like. And the question gaining serious traction right now in the Nancy Guthrie investigation and the case, at least out there in the social media ethers, and the question gaining serious traction right now, right here, is whether the disappearance of Nancy Guthrie, 84 years old, mother of Savannah Guthrie, taken from her home in the California foothills in the early morning hours, is part of the same machine. It's a question. We've talked about it a little bit on the show with Jennifer Coffendaffer. She's been talking about this quite a bit, probably more than most on social media. And I wanted to do a dive into it myself, just outside of those conversations. If you want to go back in our archive, you can go back and listen and watch, and there's a whole bunch of stuff about this. So press subscribe and go back and check that out if you want to dig deeper. The term comes from a web comic that was posted back in 2009, a cybersecurity joke. The idea was simple. Why spend months trying to crack someone's encryption when you can spend $5 on a wrench and beat the password out of them? It was funny because it was absurd, because most people would never actually do that. Except now they do, regularly. In 2025, blockchain security firm Certik documented 72 verified wrench attacks worldwide, a 75% jump from the year before. In just the first 4 months of 2026, they've already logged 34 more. Losses have blown past $100 million, and the people behind these operations have figured out something that should terrify anyone with digital assets or a family member who has them. The most advanced encryption in the world is worthless if it can just grab somebody that they love, make a phone call, and show up with a wrench. Here's how it works in practice. Because in Scottsdale, in this case, it lays out almost like a textbook. Somewhere out there, typically overseas, typically in a country that won't cooperate with the FBI, sits a person who will never touch the front door. Call them the handler, if you will. They're young. They're digitally sophisticated. They know blockchain forensics, encrypted communications, and how to stay invisible online. And they have access to information about who holds cryptocurrency and where those people live. A lot of that information comes from data breaches. The 2025 Coinbase breach alone reportedly exposed personal details for tens of thousands of users. If you're running wrench attacks, a breach like that is a shopping list. But the handler doesn't get on a plane. The handler gets on Signal or Telegram and finds people expandable. In the Scottsdale case, it was two high school kids from San Luis Obispo County. They met about a month before the job. They told police that anonymous contacts Red and 8 sent them $1,000 for supplies, gave them the target address, and pointed them at a house where they believe $66 million in crypto was sitting. The kids bought FedEx uniforms, they bought zip ties and duct tape, they drove 600 miles across state lines to a neighborhood they'd never been to, targeting people they'd never met on the instructions of handlers they couldn't identify. One of them told police he'd been invited on a trip to tie people up for access to cryptocurrency. That's the recruitment layer. Disposable, deniable, and if they get caught, and those two did get caught, the handler is insulated behind encryption and international borders and just keeps operating. The dupes take the heat. That Scottsdale case has been logged as the first verified U.S. wrench attack of 2026. It happened on January 31st, 90 minutes south of Scottsdale, in the Catalina foothills outside Tucson. Nancy Guthrie was seen alive for the last time on that same day. Same state, same day, an hour and a half apart. Now, before you're like, whoa, huzzah, I want to be careful here, because proximity in time and geography is not evidence of connection. It's also not nothing. And the people making the case for a wrench attack connection to Nancy Guthrie aren't random voices on the internet. Coffendaffer has said publicly she's been considering this possibility since early March. She's a good friend of mine. She's on the show all the time. I trust her opinion. I don't necessarily always agree with it, but it's not coming out of nowhere. Retired Colorado Detective Lisa Miller walked through the operational parallels in detail with Fox News Digital and Serta K, the same security firm tracking wrench attacks globally. But Nancy Guthrie's name, and put Nancy Guthrie's name on its official 2026 case list. Their argument has specific points that are worth hearing out. Again, not the same as these other two, but follow along with me and give me your thoughts in the comment section as we work our way through why some folks think this might be a wrench attack and why it could possibly be or not. First, the target selection. Wrench attack networks have moved increasingly toward what the security world calls proxy targeting, going after a family member instead of the person with the money. You don't need the crypto holder in the room. You need someone that crypto holder will pay anything to get back. Nancy Guthrie's daughter is one of the most recognizable faces on American morning television, Savannah Guthrie. Her compensation is publicly reported. Her mother lived alone in a remote area with a predictable routine. If you're a handler scrolling through potential leverage points against someone with visible wealth, Nancy Guthrie fits a possible profile. If you're assuming that you could get crypto from someone close to Nancy, it's not the operational assumption that Nancy's going to, oh, let me get my phone out right here and transfer that right over to your wallet. No, it's more so you're connected to people who have what they want. Second, the operative on the porch. Miller described the person captured on Nancy's doorbell camera as a bit of a doofus, and we've called them a thousand different things on this show. Cheap gear, reflective clothing, awkward firearm handling. But Miller's point was that the incompetence actually supports the theory rather than undermining it. In a wrench attack, the person at the door isn't supposed to be sophisticated. That's the whole design. The sophistication sits behind the encrypted app. The person you see on camera is the disposable layer, recruited, pointed at an address, and cut loose if anything goes wrong. Third, law enforcement confirmed early on that this was a kidnapping for ransom. Now, consider the source of the law enforcement as if that statement even means anything at all. That's what Nanos has talked about. And Ennis is a fucking idiot, in my opinion. Nancy Guthrie has said so. Savannah, has said that that she believes that it might be a kidnapping for ransom as well. Now, because I believe Nanos is an idiot, doesn't necessarily mean that this idea is wrong. It's just not what you think it is. It's just not the traditional kidnapping for ransom sort of situation. A ransom-driven abduction of an elderly family member of a wealthy public figure, that's the wrench attack playbook. So the theory, it has some structure. It has credentialed voices. It has a security firm's official stamp, and it has the Scottsdale case sitting right there on the same calendar page and not all that far away, physically. And yet, when you stop listening to how well the theory sounds and start measuring it against specific evidence in the case, it starts coming apart. And out at the edges, at the foundation. Now, look, I'm not saying it's impossible that it couldn't be a wrench attack, but I am saying let's take a look at the other side of the coin as well, as we always do here. We want to take a look at everything. Not necessarily saying it leaves us in a great place of like, see, we're on a good track, but no, it's more like, see, here's reality. And let's deal with reality on reality's terms. I think that's always a rather important thing to do. The most basic requirement of a wrench attack is a crypto connection. Every single documented case, everyone in Serta K's database, in Jameson Lopp's tracker, in every case study published by TRM Labs, traces back to someone who either holds cryptocurrency or is directly tied to someone who does. The targeting pipeline depends on data, a breach, an exchange record, a blockchain trail, a social media post about holdings. There has to be a reason the handler believed, or the dupe believed, crypto was accessible through that target. And in the Nancy Guthrie case, there's really no publicly identified reason. Zero. There's no evidence that Savannah Guthrie holds cryptocurrency. It'd be a big assumption if she did. Might she? Might she have some of her investments in there? Sure, it might. And in a lot of things, probably. It's probably, some of it is probably in a greater portfolio. When you have that kind of wealth, it's also not something you may even be aware of where your money is sitting or working for you. There's no data breach that connects the Guthrie family to a crypto targeting pipeline. Nobody who supports this theory, not Coffendaffer, not Miller, not Serna K, has identified what would have put the Guthrie family on a wrench attack handler's radar in the first place. And you can't have a crypto-motivated crime without a crypto connection. Asking for Bitcoin in a ransom note doesn't make something a wrench attack any more than asking for unmarked bills makes something a bank robbery. Criminals use Bitcoin because it's harder to trace. That's opportunism, not organizational identity. Now look at the doorbell camera. The person on Nancy's porch discovered it unseen, it seems, and improvised, pulling weeds out of the yard and covering it up in real time. Little cilantro here. Think about what that means. If this is supposed to be a wrench attack, the entire point of the handler layout is reconnaissance. The handler identifies the target, researches the property, provides the address, and briefs the operative on what they're walking into. A visible doorbell camera is the most obvious thing a handler would flag. It's the first thing you'd mention. In the Scottsdale case, the operative showed up with a rehearsed cover story. FedEx uniforms, a box, a dolly designed to get the door open voluntarily. That is preparation. That's someone who was briefed. The person at Nancy's door had no cover story, no disguise strategy, and didn't know the camera existed until he was standing in front of it. That's not a briefed operative. That's someone who showed up without a plan. The gear reinforces the same conclusion. In documented wrench attacks, handlers invest in operational cover because the whole operation depends on getting inside without raising an alarm before they're ready. The Scottsdale kids, like I said, they purchase the uniform props, a plausible pretext. The person at Nancy's door was wearing cheap reflective clothing with nothing resembling a thought-out approach. No uniform, no props, no strategy at the door. That's consistent with someone working alone or on minimal resources. It's not consistent with someone who is equipped and directed by a network that has shown, in other cases, the ability to coordinate across state lines and outfit operatives for the job. Maybe they're new to the game. Maybe they're trying it out for the first time and this just went horribly. I don't know. Then there's Serna K classification, which has gotten a lot of play and deserves a harder look than it's received. Serna K put Nancy's case on its official wrench attack list and cited a Bitcoin ransom demand as the defining feature. But the ransom communications that surfaced publicly in this case, sent to media outlets, came from opportunists with no established connection to whoever actually took Nancy. We have no real certifiable proof that these demand letters were from the actual kidnappers. So that's a leap one has to make and in their mind go, no, that's definitely from them for that to actually work. At least one of those demand letters came from a California man named Derek Kalela, who was a confirmed hoax. Resulted in federal charges. If Serna K built its classification on ransom demands that investigators and other experts have already separated from the actual crime, then the classification isn't built on case evidence. It's built on noise that someone else generated after the fact. Putting Nancy Guthrie's name on a wrench attack list because some ransom note that showed up that can't be verified where it came from doesn't make her case a wrench attack. It means the list needs better sourcing. So there's that. Pima County has pushed back formally. A department spokesperson told Fox News they've never received any reports referencing wrench attacks in their community and have not confirmed any crypto connection. Well, guess what, Pima County News? And be like, hey, I'm going to do a wrench attack this week and write Nanos a formal letter letting him know here's exactly what it is and here's what it's called. The flat out denial, no matter what you think about this, their investigation, tells you it's not the direction that people with access to the actual evidence have pursued much. What does that mean? You can take that anyway, too, quite honestly. Because there are potential, I guess, strings you could pull here. I didn't want to say it's a lane, but it's strings. And if you got nothing, you're going to pull on those strings and see what comes up. And underneath all of the expert commentary and the security reports and the coincidence of the Scottsdale timeline, the evidence you can actually observe still tells a simpler story. Someone showed up at an elderly woman's home. They discovered the camera on the spot and scrambled. They were wearing cheap gear with no operational thought behind it. They handled their firearm, if that's what it is, like somebody who doesn't carry one regularly. They left behind forensic material that investigators are now running through genetic genealogy. Every one of those facts points more clearly towards someone who came to burglarize a home they expected to be empty and found themselves in a situation they weren't ready for. Not towards a coordinated crypto extortion network with an overseas handler running the show through encrypted channels. I get why the theory has legs. I do. When a case drags on month after month, with no arrest, no named suspect, no answers, people look for a framework that explains the silence. And a wrench attack with its overseas masterminds and encrypted cutouts and jurisdictional dead ends explains the silence beautifully. It makes the absence of progress feel like a feature of the crime rather than a failure of the investigation. That's the comforting thought if you've been watching this case and wondering why nobody's in handcuffs yet. An amateur who got lucky and hasn't been caught is a harder thing to sit with. Doesn't have the same narrative architecture. Doesn't explain the void as neatly. But wanting an explanation and having evidence for one are two different things. The wrench attack theory checks some boxes. The proxy target logic makes sense on paper. The Scottsdale timing is hard to ignore. The doofus on the porch as a disposable operative argument has a certain internal logic to it. Those points deserve to be taken seriously, and I've tried to lay them out as fairly as I can here. But the boxes it misses are the ones that hold the theory together. No crypto connection to the family, no data trail to the target, no evidence of handler reconnaissance, no operational preparation consistent with a directed job, and a security firm's classification that appears to rest on ransom demands that have been debunked. You can't build a wrench attack case without the wrench. And right now, the crypto link that makes the entire model work simply isn't there. The theory deserves a serious look. And it got one. And where it stands right now with everything we see in this case, we can see in this case, is that a framework being stretched over this case called a wrench attack, in my opinion, doesn't quite fit. Now, could there be information that makes this fit into the square peg hole a little bit better? Maybe. Anything is possible. Things can change. Keep going with where the evidence leads us. But the simpler answer at this point in time is still harder to accept. And sometimes the most unsatisfying explanation is the one the evidence actually supports. In the case of Nancy Guthrie, that is still where the evidence points. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. There is no right or wrong to this. There's just looking at reality, evaluating it, and going where it leads. That, in my opinion, is where that theory sits right now. Not completely. I mean, I'll entertain anything. I'll keep entertaining this, sure. Because there could be pieces that we don't know yet that actually put this into better perspective. We're not aware of it yet. I'm hoping to God the investigators are. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We will continue our conversation there. Be sure to press subscribe if you've not done so already. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.